For the record, my name is Jonathan Plant, and this oral history is being conducted for the Mi Familia Mi Comunidad project. Today's date is October 15th, 2016, and the location is the Johnny Connor Museum in Kingsville, Texas. This event is a collaboration of the Connor Museum and the South Texas Archives, made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. The purpose of this project is to obtain the oral histories of South Texas residents in an attempt to document, collect, and preserve the rich heritage of Hispanics living in South Texas. For the record, please state your first name and last name.
My name is Maggie Salinas.
Your age?
I'm 82 years old.
Date of birth?
May the 3rd, 1934.
And your current street address?
1116 East King, apartment A.
And how long have you lived in South Texas, Maggie?
I was born in Kingsville, Texas, 82 years ago.
Very good. And I understand you're going to give us a little bit of information about Mother Julia.
Yes, yes. That's a very special project that I've been involved in due to the fact that it will be 100 years that Mother Julia came to Kingsville from Mexico to set up a convent and a school for children. One of the main reasons that Kingsville was chosen was because due to the revolution in Mexico, where Mother Julia had started or initiated several homes for young ladies. And so in the Catholic religion. So when it became difficult to even attend Mass, it was decided that she would travel to South Texas, not too far away from where she across the border, but enough that she would not be persecuted. So she asked permission from the diocese in Corpus at that time to settle here in Kingsville. And she was given permission because the St. Martin's Church was also founded within a few years of each other, of the convent being established here also. And so she and other nuns from Mexico, from the Order of Mexico, came to Kingsville.
And what order were they a member of?
The Missionary Daughters of the Most Pure Virgin Mary. And that order still exists, where it was founded in Mexico, but it still exists here in the U.S. And Kingsville is its headquarters. And there are others, homes in Mexico and Peru, in Washington State, New Jersey, and Nigeria.
Now, did Mother Julia found the order?
Yes, found the order, and also established the convent here in Kingsville.
And so this was the original...
Yes, where they started.
Starting place of that order.
Yes.
Was she a member of a different order when she was living in Mexico?
No. It was not organized in Mexico as yet. When she was 19 years old and she was guided by a priest and other people that were involved in religion and also providing homes for young ladies. So apparently there was, her parents were well off financially, so she was able to start that kind of order in Mexico.
And her family was a very well-educated family,
yes,
right? Because
yes.
Wasn't her father a professor or teacher?
He was a professor, and her mother was also a music teacher. And so Mother Julia was the only girl in the family. And one of the boys became a priest, and another one became a bishop. And so they were all very close, as I should say, to the church, the Catholic Church. So when Mother Julia started her convent here, it will be, she started in 1916. And so she bought a home, one of the first homes that was built by the King Ranch. So they had the house moved to 410 East Richard Avenue. And that's where they also started the, Mother Julia was very much also into education.
So, I'm sorry, let me ask you a question. The house they bought from the King Ranch, was that one of the workers, one of the vaqueros' houses that was on the ranch that they relocated?
I don't think so. Okay. These were separate homes that were built for people in town.
In town, okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, of course, they added on later to the homes, to another home there in the chapel, in the property. But one of the cuartitos, that we call cuartito, is a one-room house where Mother Julia started her teaching. Mostly it was for boys. There were no other schools in the community for Hispanic children. And so, because she was so highly interested in education, she started by going in the neighborhood and ringing a bell and saying, come on to the convent, come on to the chapel, and that's how she got started.
And where was this located?
At 410 East Richard Avenue. And the original, their home, their convent, later, years later, burned, and so they had to move elsewhere. But the schoolhouse was saved. It was just at another location. So during all this history and all these things that happened during the war and things like that, finally they decided that they wanted to relocate where they started. And that is a process that has taken place in the last few years, 8 or 10 years.
And that's with the museum and chapel that's
yes.
there now
yes.
on Richard Street.
Yes, yes. We were able to buy the property back. It was very difficult because there's always financial needs, and there was no financial assistance from, this came directly from the public and the order from Mexico, not from the diocese here.
So you had to raise the funds then to purchase the property?
Yes, yes. And then move the cuartito and start to refurbish it and just plan it all out.
Okay, so the cuartito then, was that the schoolhouse?
Yes.
The school?
That's
school
the original
room?
Yes.
And that was moved off the property at one point?
Yes. It went to St. Joseph Church.
Oh, okay. And what did they use it as a classroom or?
No, they used it mostly for meetings and prayer groups and things like that.
Okay.
So at one time, some of the members of St. Joseph's Church wanted to redo Mother Julia's cuartito, but at their location of the St. Joseph's. So a group of us kind of not interfere, but brought out the fact that it was so historical and that the place for it to come would be on Richard Avenue, where it had really started. That was historic. And so we prevailed, and so that's what we have now.
Did you purchase that back from St. Joseph's, or did they donate it, or how did that work?
They donated, but the nuns left their living quarters there at St. Joseph's in exchange for having the cuartito given back to them.
Okay, so the nuns then, they still live there at St. Joseph's, or?
No, they moved to another location.
Oh, okay.
Because it was too far from the chapel and too far from other activities that they had. So they are on 9th Street, 9th and Nettie.
Now, how many of the order do we still have in Kingsville?
We have about 8 or 10.
Okay.
Most of the nuns that are residing there now are retired. But at one time, they were teachers, and they work here in the community, just like Mother Julia worked here for many, many years. And so that has become the official convent, although the convent is not there, but where it originated.
Now, the original convent home that burned down, I guess, was a wooden,
yes,
wooden structure, as opposed to the classroom and, of course, the chapel, which are,
yes,
I guess they're made of concrete block,
yes,
cinder block?
Yes, cinder blocks and,
yeah,
and so forth.
So that's almost fireproof.
Yes,
yes,
luckily.
Yes.
But still, it was, when it was sold originally, the person who bought it was a welder. So the property had a lot of debris, even inside the chapel. So it took a lot to clean it up.
Because the chapel was actually converted to a private residence.
Yes.
After it was,
yes,
sold. And when, yes, was it, when was it sold? Do you know, approximately?
Probably in the 70s, late 70s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And in the corner of that area, which is now part of the Mother Julia complex, was a tortilla factory.
Hmm.
And they worked 24 hours a day. So it was very difficult for the nuns to conduct any kind of church activities there because of the interference from all the noise and all the things that were going on. But
so there was a business manufacturing tortillas right next to the chapel?
Yes.
West of the chapel, I guess?
Right at the corner, that white building that, uh-huh, we have now, that is a, what do you call it? What is that business? Where you sell, thrift store.
Oh, yes, okay.
Thrift store, yes.
Huh.
That thrift store had been leased to me for a visual arts building for 50 years. And so, but it needed a lot of work. It needed to be cleaned up, and there was no longer a tortilla factory, obviously.
Right.
So, but when we finally bought the property adjoining it to the chapel and where we were going to bring the cuartito, then I turned it over to the owner, and I said, wouldn't it be better if you, the owner, donated the property to the nuns so that they could have that full access to on the corner? And he agreed.
Okay.
And so I didn't pursue anymore the visual arts building that I think is much needed in that area, or anywhere in town for that matter. But that's where they have their thrift shop, and that's where they sell, and that's part of their income.
How many floors do they have in that? I've never been inside that building.
Just one.
Just one?
Just one.
Huh.
It's a thick concrete floor.
Right.
And it used to be, the original use was a meat market and a grocery store.
Oh. And when did the tortilla factory open?
I want to say probably maybe the 80s.
Oh, that recently? In the 1980s?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Maybe 70s, late,
okay,
70s. So they moved elsewhere. The factory moved elsewhere. They moved to East Corral, past the 77 bypass, and where now the AEP has their training facilities. That's where they had the tortilla factory.
Now, somebody told me that Mother Julia's school started in the building that is now Poncho's, or started in a corner of the building that is now Poncho's, or something.
Grandpa went to class there at the basement of the building itself, on the corner there in Richard, and I remember the side street.
It's 8th Street.
Right.
Yes, but yes, my father was one of the students that went with Mother Julia, but it was in that same building, the Cuartito.
Okay, okay.
And it was never, and it didn't start anywhere else, it started right.
Okay, that is the original.
Yes, the original site.
School.
Yes.
Now a little bit, excuse me, sorry. A little bit more about Mother Julia's order. What was their specific mission as an order? I know each of the orders has a different.
Yes, theirs was education.
Okay.
Education.
Now at the time when she began her school, which would have been in the 19-teens, right?
1916. Yes.
Okay. Didn't they have the Mexican school going at that time? They had a Mexican school south of town?
Yes, not yet.
Not yet? That was before that?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. And so there were the Mexican-American students not allowed in the public school? The regular public school? Or there was no public
there
school?
There was no public school, and if there was, it was a Plato school.
Right.
And we were not allowed. It was segregated.
Okay, so they wouldn't even admitted you as
no.
students?
No.
So your father was a student of Mother Julia's, and when did he attend school there?
I believe it was in 1922.
And how many grades did she teach all the way up to?
There were no specific grades because
okay.
they were teaching, of course, religion.
Right.
And reading,
right.
writing, and math.
So when they graduated, did they get a diploma or?
They didn't stay. They didn't remain to graduate.
Okay. Okay, so it was more like a primary school.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So then, did your father continue his education after he left Mother Julia's, or was that all of his formal?
He did not want to go to Austin School.
Okay.
He felt like he was too old to go to start all over again. Because when Austin School was started, and we were assigned grades, they, no matter what grade or what level of education you had, you started out with what they call zero, from scratch. You have to start all over again.
Because you were a Mexican-American?
Yes.
So they basically start you at the elementary, basic, bottom level, even if you were...
first grade, but zero.
Oh my gosh.
So even if we were older, but... I guess with me, I never knew the difference that it's okay with me, I'm going to school.
So did you go to Stephen Austin School?
Yes, I graduated in 1949 from Austin School. I also went to St. Martin's. So.
And St. Martin's was a direct outgrowth of Mother Julia's school, is that correct?
Yes.
How did that transition happened from Mother Julia's school to St. Martin's?
That was because the demand was so high that the priest, the new priest that had started St. Martin's Church, felt the need that for a additional school, not just for kinder or pre-kinder. So that was Father Jose Fernandez who started that. It was Father Cavazos who worked with the nuns in the original Mother Julia days. But when they wanted to build a different school for higher grades, then it was Father Jose Fernandez
Okay, so the St. Martin School, did they go all the way through the high school level?
Fifth grade.
Okay.
She graduated.
Okay, so it was still more primary
yes.
grades.
Yes.
And then.
But I did not know that the St. Martin's school and property belongs to the diocese.
Right, right.
So when they decided to close St. Martin's school, then they leased the building and other facilities to KISD.
Huh.
So
are those buildings still around?
Still there.
Is it over by St. Martin's Church?
A block away.
Okay. Huh.
It's on 8th and Nettie.
Okay.
East Nettie.
Okay. So how long did your father go to Mother Julia's school? Do you know how many years?
Probably 3 years.
Okay. And how old would he have been when he started?
He was 10 years old.
10 years old? Okay, so about 10 through 13 he was going to school there?
Yes, and that's why he thought he was too old growing up. I should say, to go to Austin School.
Because it would have been the equivalent of going back to kindergarten, right?
Yes. Yes.
Now, you said you went to St. Martin's?
Yes.
And then to
Mother Julia's.
Stephen F. Austin?
Yes.
Did you go to Mother Julia's?
Yes. Yes, I did. She was not my teacher, but
right.
I went to that school.
And how many years did you go there?
I would say two.
Two? And about what age did you start there?
I was 5.
Okay. So you moved from there to St. Martin's, and then from St. Martin's to Stephen Austin?
Yes.
And
yes.
When you went to Stephen Austin, did they put you back in a kindergarten class, or did you move ahead to the next grade?
No, they put me in zero class. I had to start all over.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 7 years old.
Okay. So I guess that would be the equivalent to maybe holding you back 2 years.
Exactly.
But not like 13, but that's still...
It still was a...
And they just did that because you were Mexican-American.
Yes, because they said I did not know how to speak English. I had to be taught how to read and write in English. So all of us that went to Austin School went through that process. Because they figured we didn't know anything. But when I started school, I knew, of course, my name, my address, who my parents were. Anybody who would ask me in English, I knew that already.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then at Mother Julia's school, were the classes conducted entirely in Spanish?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did she teach any English in the school, or was it entirely in Spanish?
It was entirely Spanish.
Okay. Huh. What about St. Martin's? Was their instruction all in Spanish, or did they have English in Spanish?
They had English. They had English. Both.
Okay. But you didn't have any difficulty as a child going to St. Martin's in the English, having the English and Spanish instruction as opposed to just the Spanish, right?
Right. No, I didn't.
Hmm.
And so at some point, I just don't remember exactly, but when I started at Austin School, and I went for a year and a half, because they used to divide the grades. It used to be high, second, low, second.
Right.
At the end, they would divide those. I skipped a year because I guess they took a test and they found out that I could read a whole book or I could read easily.
Right. You showed that your academic level was too high for that
yes.
grade.
So they moved me to a higher.
Well, that's good to know.
Yes, yes.
That's
otherwise,
good to know.
I stayed there. And that's how a lot of the students were discouraged to continue that school.
Huh.
Because here were the younger kids coming, and you felt like, okay, I'm a teenager or close to being a teenager, and I'm still with these kids. You know, so, somehow it didn't, you were discouraged. It was very discouraging. But maybe I was so naive, I just loved going to school.
And it was strictly because you were Mexican-American. There wasn't any other...
No other reason.
They didn't give you any other excuse, or just they just said, oh, you don't know English, so...
Right.
They just assumed, right?
Assumed that we didn't know anything.
No.
So, there were no tests, and of course, all of us were Hispanics.
Right.
So it became very difficult for me, and I'm sure for others, when we were transferred to junior high, because we were not used to the Anglo culture. I still have a friend who's an Anglo lady, and she and I have been friends since we started in junior high. And it's interesting that not too long ago she told me, she said, because I said, you know what, Gwen, I have been friends for ages. And she said, yes. She said, and I was so naive. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to be your friend because you were Hispanic. And she said, my mother never told me any different. And she meant it.
Well, good for her mother.
Yes. And she meant it we just bonded as friends. It wasn't because anybody told us to do or not to do. So I thought that was very telling. And I said, well, I'm glad we're still friends.
Let me ask you, Maggie, you said it was hard to adjust to junior high and the Anglo culture. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
One of the things was that we had to bring lunch to school.
Mm-hmm.
There was no cafeteria. And our lunch was different than what we saw the other kids eat. Ours wasn't a sandwich. Ours was a taquito, tortilla. And so we were embarrassed to take out our lunch. So we kind of either go outside and try to hide away from them, the other students, so that we could eat, or we wouldn't eat at all. So that was difficult.
Did they tease you?
Yes.
What? Yeah, that just sounds so strange. I bring a tortilla to lunch and...
Yes.
And
because now it's just common, but it wasn't
right.
Then. What do you have? What do you have? What's there? What's that? What do you call that? And were some of the questions.
So...
And some would tell us, you want to have half of my sandwich? And we would say no, we would decline, because we didn't know what was in that sandwich.
Smart. Probably didn't want it anyway.
No. Mm-mm. To this day, I don't like ham that much. My girls do. They say, Mother, do you want a ham sandwich? Not really.
No.
But that was the reason.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. It was very difficult.
Can you?
And our clothes were different. We wore just simple cotton clothes. And ours were real starched up so they would stand up and not be all limpy.
Right.
And so, but they were different colors, different
The other
styles.
Students didn't starch their clothes?
No.
Or they just had more expensive clothes?
Yes,
or?
They had a different materials, more expensive clothes. At least we thought.
Right. Yeah, and kids, especially at that age, are very impressionable and conscious.
Yes.
Very conscious of being different and not
yes.
wanting to stand out.
Yes.
That's an important thing at that age. So yeah, I can understand that being
And one thing
difficult.
That I remember for myself, I wore socks no matter what kind of shoes I was wearing. And that was because I was always very sensitive. My feet were always very sensitive. I hardly ever went around barefooted. And so I wore socks no matter what. Well, as we know now, you don't wear socks with all kinds of shoes. You know, it has to be specific shoes. And that was odd for them. And they would say, why are you wearing socks? Well, I wear socks every day. And things like that, you know, that were different, the way we would dress, and the style was also different.
Now, mm-hmm. when you were going to junior high, were most of your clothes homemade, or did
yes.
you get them at the, okay, so did your mother make them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. She was very good at, she was a seamstress, and so, as a matter of fact, that's how she made extra money, and by sewing for other people, too.
So the Anglo students, were they wearing more store-bought clothes?
Yes.
Is that part of?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they did. And then when it came to physical education, we had to wear shorts.
Right.
A uniform.
Yes.
And that was difficult to get used to.
Right.
Because we were not used to wearing shorts.
Right.
That was not part of our apparel, daily apparel.
Because you wore skirts?
Yes.
Or dresses?
Yes.
Right? You didn't wear slacks?
No. No.
Okay.
And certainly not shorts.
Right.
So yeah. That was different. It was hard getting used to it.
Was it more common in the Anglo community for girls to wear shorts, or was
yes.
that only in the gym class?
No, it was more common for them to wear
okay.
shorts.
Okay.
They had no problem. You know, you could tell.
Right.
And so, but gradually that was, and the teachers helped me out. I feel like they helped me a lot, because some of the teachers I had understood a little bit about the culture, so that they would make it easy for us to get used to playing with our uniforms.
Now, were all your teachers Anglo, or did you have any Hispanic
all of
teachers?
Them were Anglos.
Now, back to Mother Julia. How many years did her school stay in operation?
I believe to about 74, 75. I'd say that.
Okay.
I'm not too sure about that, but I think even by then it was kind of a lot of the students were schooled at St. Gertrude's or elsewhere.
Right. So there was not as much need.
No. And
now,
most of the parents wanted their kids to learn how to speak English.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a factor.
Now, Mother Julia herself only spoke Spanish, yes?
I believe so.
Okay. And when did she, how long did she herself keep teaching at the school? Did she come to a point where she retired from the teaching, or when did she?
I think for health reasons, and also some new regulations for the order, that she was called back to Mexico.
Oh, so she actually left Kingsville?
Yes, yes.
And then?
And I want to say that was in the early 70s, right? I'm not too sure about that.
Okay. Now, when did she pass away?
Okay, 79.
And she passed away in Mexico then?
Yes. Yes.
And then?
Now I need to verify that date.
Okay.
But I know that she was, 94, 96 when she passed away in Mexico.
And that was when Sister Maxie was caring for her
mm-hmm.
in her later years?
Yes. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about, I know the, I've seen photos of the beautiful garden
yes.
that was there at the convent. Can you tell me a little bit about the garden and the grotto, and I think the grotto was moved at one time. And
yes, and now it's back in its original place. I think that because there was having a garden was part of kind of like recreation mm-hmm. for the nuns, mm-hmm. so that they took care of their especially rose bushes, and also they would use those flowers for the church. Mm. They always had flowers in the church or in the chapel.
For the altar?
Yes, yeah. Yes. So that was part of their duty or part of their lifestyle.
So I know the garden that's there now has some very lovely rose bushes.
Yes.
Is it laid out similar to how the original garden was, or can
there
you remember some of the differences?
There's a few variations, but it's on the sidewalks that are different.
Oh, okay.
Because these are kind of at an angle.
Right.
Yes. And at that time, they were just straight. It was just a slab, almost like a slab sidewalk within the yard.
Now, the grotto, where was that moved?
To St. Joseph's.
St. Joseph's? Did they move that about the same time they moved the Cortijo?
Yes.
Okay. So when that came back, when the Cortijo came back, did this, the grotto come back too?
Yes. That was the condition that the nuns would give their home so they could have back the Cortijo and the garden. So he came back. That was an even, not swap, but arrangement.
So the nuns gave up some property?
Yes.
In exchange for moving that back? Oh, so they gave their home back to St. Joseph's?
Yes.
Okay, so...
So they could keep the property
right.
in the grotto.
So the property the nuns were living on, was that on the St. Joseph's property?
Yes. Yes.
Is that still there?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
It's still there.
Hmm. Let me... Oh my gosh, we've been talking for 30 seconds.
Yeah, it flies.
Yeah. Let me ask you really quickly. After your father left Mother Julia's school, where did he go from there?
There was another school. That was a two-story school. That's what you remember.
That's what I'm remembering.
Yes, yes. And it was in the 300 block of Miss Richard. And it was, that school was started by some of the business owners on Richard Avenue. And they brought professors from Mexico. They brought two professors and a lady to teach, because they wanted the young boys to learn about the way of life here in the U.S. in Texas. And so my father left there at Mother Julia's and then came to that school so he could learn advanced math and more advanced etiquette and work ethic and reading.
But there was no religious instruction, that was
no.
a secular
no.
school. And so did he graduate then from that school?
I don't know, there wasn't any graduation
okay.
point, but he did go as much as he could.
Okay, so that was that the end of his formal
yes.
education at that
yes.
point?
Yes.
Then what did he do?
He started working doing manual labor, and he started working as a cook in small restaurants. And then he had his own restaurant, small restaurant on Richard Avenue. And
what was it called?
It was called the Yellow Cat. The Yellow Cat.
Yellow
Cat.
Cat? Okay.
It was a bar and grill.
Oh, okay.
And so It was a little bitty place, but he always, always worked. And I never remember that, where he, even if he was unemployed, he was still without jobs.
So when did he become a jailer, city jailer then?
In the 60s.
In the 1960s? Mm-hmm. Or was he county or city jailer?
County.
County jailer.
County. He started working as helping out the at the jail, just helping. And then from there he became the chief jailer.
Was that after, did he still own his restaurant, or had he sold it by then?
He had sold it.
Okay.
Yes.
So when he became county jailer, was that unusual at that time for a Mexican American to be in that kind of government position of authority?
Yes, because mostly it was, they would hire Ambrose from Rivera or from elsewhere. But he had been there long enough for the time that he, I guess, he had shown to the sheriff what he was capable of, or he cooperated, or he knew how to deal with the prisoners. I think was his most outstanding thing. He never wore a gun, and but somehow the prisoners would not give him any kind of trouble. Even to the fact that when they had, I remember one time vividly that some of the prisoners had stopped all the commodes in the jail, and there was lots of water all over the floor. And so the sheriff said, well, let's move them to another area and until we can fix this mess and all of that. You just move them to another place. Well, my father did. He unlocked the doors to the cells and made everybody walk out to another safer place. But it never dawned on him that they would kind of jump him or try to run away, or they didn't do that. They just went deeper. They were told, no problems. So it was that kind of a job that he did. And also I remember there was this young man that had caused a major robbery in town, but he was from Tennessee. And so there was nobody to pay his fine, nobody to pay for an attorney, none of that. So, and that was before the days of court-appointed attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow, I don't know the time span, but he became real close to my dad and would help him clean up or would help him throw out the trash or things like that. And so he got sentenced to, I think, 40 or 50 years in prison. Because as a result of that robbery, the owner of the place died from injuries.
Right.
So actually he caused his death.
Right.
So he asked my father if he could, that his sister and his and other relatives were coming to visit him before they would take him to prison. And so my father said, yes, they visiting day, it doesn't have to be that day. Whenever they get here, you can have a visit with them. So later my father told us that he felt so bad for the family that was coming and to see him, and probably would be the last time they would see him.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a turkey dinner with all the trimmings for all of them. And that was so special.
Mm. Did he pay for it?
No. No, it was from he asked the sheriff that he wanted to turn in a list
So the county paid for it?
Yes, yes.
And so who was the sheriff then who hired your father?
Scarborough.
What is Scarborough?
he, I know they, it was Chief Scarborough Jr., but he was the older one.
Okay.
You see, the first sheriff was Scarborough, but he was junior.
Okay.
His son also was the sheriff.
Right.
But that was not the one that my father had started working for. He was the older man.
The original?
Yes.
Now, what was it about your father that he was able to get the respect or cooperation of the prisoners? What was it about him, do you think?
I would say that it was his demeanor. He was not ever arrogant, or he was very compassionate, and he liked to talk and joke with them. And somehow in the conversation, he made you feel like we're buddies. I think that's what it was. He had tremendous respect for other people.
And yet they still respected him as a force of law.
Yes.
They didn't try to take advantage of him or.
No, not at all. Like that incident when all the prisoners had to be moved in. He said, just go on and walk over there.
And this jail was in the courthouse, right?
Yes, the third floor.
On the third floor. One, I know I got off Mother Julia. One last question. I know you said she had already left the school when you went there. Had she already gone back to Mexico, or was she still in Kingsville? Or
I think she was not in Kingsville, but I think she was maybe at the convent in Robstown.
Okay.
Or elsewhere. Because she also established a convent in Washington State.
Uh-huh.
New Jersey, and of course the ones that were in Mexico, and Peru. There are two convents in Peru that she started, and one in Nigeria.
Right. So she was still affiliated with the order and still active, but not teaching.
Right.
Do you know what she was doing after she left the classroom?
I think what she did, she was teaching the younger nuns who were coming into the order, is what I think.
Okay.
Training them and things like that.
The novices?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, excellent. Is there anything else you want to, I know I've taken a lot of your time already.
No, that's
anything
okay.
else you want to share?
That's what I'm here for.
Anything else you want to share with us today?
Can you think of, she graduated from St. Martin's in the fifth grade, and my three kids were the third generation that went, because my father had been to St. Martin's, and myself, and then.
And tell us, did I ask you your father's name?
No, he was Ramon Blanco.
And when was he born?
He was born in
1911.
Yes.
1911? And when did he pass away?
About, 10 years ago?
He was 94 mm-hmm. when he passed away, so
2004?
Yes.
Or five?
Five.
Okay. Well, I think we'll go ahead and let you go for now.